Hello and welcome there to another episode of the Cliff Notes podcast, where we ask a leader and find their way. My name is Tristan Bailey. I run agency Holding Bay, helping manufacturers move their businesses forwards. And today I've been happy to be joined by Raj Kundandalia, who's Managing Director of CyberOne Cybersecurity, who helps reduce your vulnerabilities to cyber criminals. How are you doing today, Raj?
I'm great, Tristan. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. It's keeping busy, keep myself out of trouble, and looking forward to having a good conversation with you. Let's reduce our risks and get a better understanding of this space, help the people in industry. We can see many places are getting more technology coming in. Some technology is useful, some technology we may need to learn how to use better. I mean, how did you get into this area? I mean, what's your background that's brought you to this field?
Yeah, so I previously worked as a digital project manager where I helped devise applications, some web apps, mobile apps. I actually did some developing myself. Also built some robots as well in another lifetime ago. What I realized working with these digital agencies that I came across probably in 2015, I created an application that controlled a car. And within that vehicle, I was told to get something called a penetration test, which is known for what is a penetration test. It's an ethical hack. So within half an hour of testing this app, the actual ethical hacker drove the car off the road. That was my first sign of, wow, what if we never tested this and it happened on the motorway, or, you know, it could have caused a major accident if a criminal were to hack that app. And then I started to do some research and I was a bit concerned that not many organizations were thinking about this kind of form of security. So I saw a massive opportunity within the industry where more organizations should be doing this. So then I decided to work for a cybersecurity company based in Manchester. And that's where my real cybersecurity journey began. Prior to that, I give you another example of a cyber incident that I was personally involved with. And people might think, you know, this may not be a cyber incident, but I'll tell you why it is as well. So probably about, you're looking at about 8 years ago, where we went out for a family meal, took my mother-in-law out, who wasn't doing so great at the time. She was suffering from depression, and it was my sister-in-law's birthday. So we went out for a meal. As we went for the meal, my mother-in-law, before she leaves the house, she switches on the radio, she leaves the lights on, so it feels like someone's in the house, and there's usually at least two cars on the driveway. So I said, okay, that's fine. So I took her to the meal, we sat down, had a lovely meal, then I dropped her off, and then I get a phone call from her. She's crying. I was like, what's happened? We've been robbed. My house has been broken into. I'm like, how? You had the radio on, you had the telephone on. Then looking back, when we were at the meal, my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law tagged us all in on Facebook. So I just thought, right, so whoever the cyber criminal probably knew, the criminal at that time knew that we weren't at the house. So tagging us in, they could see our social media accounts where that everyone that lived in the house or would be in the house was out at this meal. So I found out the time frame when it would have happened. And that's how the actual criminals knew that we weren't in the house. And that was another sign that what you commonly put out there could be a big risk to you personally or your business. But the trauma that my mother-in-law went through, we had to move out of our house. She couldn't live there anymore. She didn't feel safe. So that is the other extreme on the damage it can do to people. And that was my first experience of using, you know, where somebody's used social media to find out where that individual was. So then they could exploit him. Also, unfortunately, at this time, it was robbing my mother-in-law's house.
That's very sad. I hope she's being able to get past it a bit more in the time since.
Yeah.
Just to roll you back a little bit, you mentioned a couple of words people might not be so familiar with of hacker, or did you call it an ethical hacker? Is this someone breaking into your system, or is this someone you knew? And then of penetration testing, is this someone probing or having access to the building, or what? I mean, what are they testing, or what does that mean? Just to give us those two.
Yeah, sure. So you've got an ethical hacker who probably goes through the right training through company, through university, get the right cybersecurity badges, meaning they're ethical. They've got a right to do some kind of security test, but that's usually signed off when they do that test. So what a hacker can do, they can test a website, a mobile app, anything that's probably connected to a network or internet. That's an ethical hackers is part of my company. That's what I use. So I'll test organizations' networks. So if a cyber criminal, so you've got a cyber criminal who's actually a criminal. He's not an ethical hacker. He's classed as a hacker. And they go out there to basically hack an organization because it's the way they make money. So they will find holes within someone's network or application where they can exploit. What an ethical hacker does, he does the same thing, but he actually writes that in a report to show the customer or the client who we're testing for where these holes are so they can fix them. So a penetration test is just a word for hacking. So an ethical hack.
Okay. And so what we're doing these to what? To toughen up the application or to check for, in the real world, unlocked doors and windows or people who haven't been careful or something like that? Is that sort of what we're looking for?
Yeah. So if I give you a scenario here. So if you picture your house, you probably locked that front door, you probably closed that window, and you maybe even set your security alarm when you go to sleep or you leave your house. In the digital world, what happens is you don't know if that front door or window is locked. So what a security professional, an ethical hacker, does is they ensure that there's no doors and windows that are open where a cyber criminal could actually come into your network and maybe steal something. Because you can't physically see it, they make the visible to you and outline where your doors are open and where a cyber criminal could get into your network or that application and cause some harm.
Gotcha. So is this when we're told to have good passwords and strong passwords? Is that the sort of thing you're meaning, or is it a bit more sophisticated than that?
Yes, so that's one of them. So your password, just think of your password as that lock on your door. You know, if they have your password, they can walk straight into your building. So password security is a big thing. But also what could happen, as a business, we don't actually own all the software that we use within that company. We can't develop it, or we don't develop, you know, we're not responsible for the software on our Windows or our Mac or our iPhone or our Android phone. And these also have other software applications in there. If those applications have holes in there, this is why the likes of Apple and Microsoft and Android and Apple release all these security updates, because all these applications, in my opinion, have vulnerabilities in them. They're flawed. Hence why you get so many updates. So every time when you get an update, it's to fix. You know, it's to fix a vulnerability. The problem with a lot of organizations is they don't apply all these updates. They're not aware of these updates. So if you picture your house at the moment, you got a router, you got your Alexa app, you may have your smart TV and your phone. You may have a strong password. Just picture that house again. In that software, if the back door's open, they're not going to go through the front door, they're going to go through the back door. And that back door can only be closed once you do that update, which most organizations don't do and they don't monitor. Does that make sense?
No, it does. So it takes a little bit of time to you see all these updates and things pop up, or things tell you it's time to update, and it's usually in the middle of the day and you just wanted to go to a meeting or for lunch or whatever. But they're things that we should be doing. That's part of this security that you're talking about, is making sure that updates are run and things are up to date.
Yeah. So one of the things I always recommend is always update to the latest software. So Microsoft no longer support Windows 7. So I recommend everyone moving on to Windows 10. If you're using anything older than Windows 10, then you should update to Windows 10 straight away, because Microsoft no longer support any updates or security updates for that operating system. So it's very important to know that if you can no longer update your iPad or your phone, that you should really replace it, because what happens is there's so many doors open to the application where a cyber criminal can exploit it.
Right. But if I'm used to working in a business or working with machinery and stuff, well, that's not on my phone. What's my phone got to do with it? You told me I need to make sure my phone was updated, but that's not where I'm working, is it? So,
yeah. So personally, if you're connected to your company's Wi-Fi and you're not updating your phone, or it's a work phone, and personally, you should update it, because a cyber criminal doesn't care who you are. Doesn't matter if you're 3-year-old or a adult, a grandfather, doesn't matter your age or who you are. They will exploit you if they can. So it's very important that you update all your devices, because if they see an opportunity, it's like this. If you left your wallet out on your driveway with it open and people can see money on it, and then you stepped in your house, what's the chances of your wallet still being there after an hour or two? Unless you're in a decent street, but if you're on a busy street, someone's going to take that wallet. It's the same thing with your phone. If you leave it open and you're not updating your phone, eventually it will get compromised. And that's what you're near enough doing. Answering the question, your working environment, as a manufacturer, you probably have a lot of applications that you don't update, or you need that piece of software. If it's connected to our internet or some kind of network that can be accessed from the internet, then this is what cyber criminals are looking for. So they work like we do. They see it as a, you know, full-time job. And this is what they're doing 24 hours, you know, a day. They're scanning various networks across the globe, across the UK, to find these open doors and these back doors so they can exploit them.
Mm-hmm. I've seen more recently they shut down a, was it oil or is it gas pipeline in America? And I think they compromised one of the countries in Europe, their power system, by hacking into the computers. And obviously that's quite a different scale of things to think about, isn't it? When it's the flow of a fuel or flow of power is being interrupted because someone's individual computer, so not technically the flow of the liquid or the gas, has got compromised and locked people out of the system. I mean, because I can appreciate some of the things you've gone over there are as much around working with your IT department, making sure your computers are updated and things. And that's, as am I understanding right, that's not totally your field. Yours is more the readiness and making sure the business as a whole or the systems that they're running are secure. Could you just walk us through that a little bit of, I mean, what is an engagement or what something looked like? Now we've sort of got an understanding a bit more of what cybersecurity is. What is it that you're helping with? Because going towards, it's going to cost something. I mean, it costs me to buy new computers and keep things updated and all different stuff. So, I mean, where am I going to then work out what this sort of return on investment is based on working with someone such as yourself?
So being in the UK, if you did suffer a cyber breach, which you where personal identified information was leaked, that could be of your employers or your customers or any information that you hold, you got GDPR, which we're still, you know, even though we're no longer part of the EU, we still comply with that law. So depending on your turnover, it's either 4% of your annual turnover or 10 million euros, which example of this was when BA got hacked, they actually had the highest fine. I think it was over about 240 million they paid out. So it wasn't 10 million euros, it was 4% of their annual turnover. That's what they had to pay out. So updating that piece of laptop, which may cost you 500 quid or whatever, is such a small cost compared to that breach that could compromise your business. So the other thing I want to mention is who's responsible. It's actually everyone in an organization, but it needs to come from the head down. The board need to make sure they've got appropriate controls, or the managing director, that there are systems and processes in place to minimize cyber crime and incidents. And you can't prevent it all, but as long as you've got appropriate controls in place, you can minimize the risk massively. So you've got government badges out there, which if you're going to work with the MOD or a local government, is called Cyber Essentials, which is released by the UK government in 2014. And the government actually say if that is applied correctly, and it's very basic controls, you can reduce 90% of internet risk. And that's simply as updating, changing certain passwords, making sure you've got appropriate controls in place, following best guidelines. Because what the UK government realised, that cybercrime is increasing, and the ones that are victim are the ones that are not probably taking it seriously enough.
Gotcha. Are these a bit like an ISO standard or something, like a program to work through and some processes to follow to get up to speed? And then that offers a level of protection? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So the ISO standards, a lot of them make up GDPR, like ISO 27001, 9001. I think there's privacy ones and all sorts. So if you're compliant with a lot of these ISO standards, then you're compliant with GDPR. The problem is that most companies in the UK isn't compliant with GDPR. And this is where things like Cyber Essentials, it doesn't resolve it all. It's just a step in the right direction, because you can't implement such a big framework within the short space of time. It's a marathon. You need to build on it. But also, it's not a tick box exercise. It's a cultural change that you need to build in the organization. And by building that, what happens as well is, like that example of what happened in the US with the oil situation, they got hacked due to their suppliers. So there's a supply chain issue. So larger companies in the UK and Europe and globally are now looking for supply assurance. And they do audits. They want to know what you got in place. Have you done that ethical hack, that pen test, which a lot of organizations do look, you know, you doing. So every time they recommend you do that minimum once a year, which is a test on your external and internal network. You may then think, right, well, we don't, in some of the applications that you use, like I always recommend testing like your website and some of the applications that you custom built in-house, because you're probably responsible for updating those applications. But applications that you probably may get off the shelf, like CRM systems, just to ensure from a supply assurance point of view, they have got the appropriate controls and policies and insurances in place that they're testing. Example of the oil situation and the supply chain there. If your supply person has a into your organization, which is that back door, and it's just to ensure that back door is secure. If they are ever compromised, there's appropriate controls in place that they communicate that to you as well.
Okay. Okay. So, I mean, just thinking about this and the way, I mean, many people are back in work now, but it has changed for some people who can do sort of desk jobs and things, that their work habits have changed or the work patterns and things. I mean, has that impacted your work and businesses' risks with this as well? If the workforce is suddenly more distributed and not just on one site, does that make it easier?
Yeah, so we've got more of a hybrid model where people work from home and work all over the place now. And that does expose a bigger risk because, for example, those that are working from home, they're working on a home network, which maybe their router, for example, is best practices in cybersecurity, is change your admin password. And I tell you, if you got a Skybox router or a BT router, the Skybox router, I guarantee you, your password might be admin or Sky. So a cyber criminal can hack that within 2 seconds or 3 seconds into your router. They're into your home network, which they can see what you probably are doing for work purposes. So that's a big risk from working from home. Also, working remotely in areas that you probably don't know what security measures they have in place. And you're probably thinking, well, obviously, you know, I work in a cafe, I'm out and about. How can I ensure that it is secure? Well, in terms of if you're accessing any like corporate network from where you are, it's best to use a VPN, which is a virtual private network. It masks what you're browsing. But if you're not browsing any sensitive corporate, you're not accessing another network or another corporate CRM system. As long as you've got that padlock on that web browser, and if you're connecting to a Wi-Fi, just ensure that whoever, if it's at Starbucks, you're connecting to the Wi-Fi because cyber criminals set up different Wi-Fi hotspots as well. Then just be mindful of the password you're entering in there. We're all guilty of a lot of us using the same passwords. So I always recommend using some kind of password manager or a longer password with 3 different characters. It just helps in that sense that using a lot more, you know, you are using a more secure password.
Mm-hmm. No, I like that. Just to be thinking back on the business level, as you were giving us some advice on a personal level there, have you got any sort of case studies or something you could talk through or some piece of advice you could give as to what sort of things would you be doing once you've done some of this testing that's going to help start reducing that risk and making us a more viable business and not having to ramp up our insurances or our worries to keep us covered?
Yeah, so my first step is always to do like a workshop with a company to actually understand what risks they are exposed to. And the way it works is telling them why they would be a victim of cybercrime within the organization, share some stats with them, and telling them to start with that. I think the first thing is looking at what assets they hold, what software they use, writing down a list of all of those, because each software and each piece of asset has that exposure for risk. For example, at one point, all our phones were going to have to change because we will no longer be able to update that software. That's a risk, but it might not be 2 years or 3 years time, but it's still a business cost and risk. You may be using a temporary CRM system just to test something. That's also, you're looking to move into another CRM system, but you probably, that software that you're using, does that company do any testing? Do they have any security measures in place? And these are the questions you need to ask yourself. And when it comes to cyber insurance, you probably need to look at what's, most cyber insurances don't pay out because the companies don't have the basics in place. That could be some kind of monitoring to ensure that you're regularly updating, which is like patch updates. Could be you may not have any antivirus on your computer. Antivirus is only picks up 33% of threats out there, but it's best to have something than nothing. They will look at if you've got any firewalls. Do you do any user awareness training for your staff? Because you may have the best security controls in the world, but if that staff downloads an attachment, which could be malicious software, which we class as malware, which then can infect your network or your computer and maybe hold you to ransom. It's also all those things that I look at, seeing what's the organization's knowledge in cybersecurity, what controls do they have in place, and then go through that journey on what they should have in place. And then at the end of it, get them to work towards some kind of badge. And I'll say the first step, and most security professionals say Cyber Essentials is very basic, but what a lot of those professionals don't realize is a lot of people don't even have Cyber Essentials controls in place. Cyber Essentials is a stepping stone, as well as the main goal is to work towards ISO 27001 to make sure that you've got appropriate controls in place. But the overall picture is, how can we keep the organization safe, but also make them more attractive to their clients and their other suppliers where they would like to do more work with them? Because insurance is now, when in cybercrime and supply assurance is what everyone's currently looking towards.
Yeah, because I mean, outside of paying out or if your machine's compromised or something got stolen, you've got your partners and the market being aware of this too, that that's something that's going to take much more than money just to build back. if you're an unreliable partner or you've risked their business as well through a partnership that you've got with them. Difficult to work some of those things back, I imagine, that this stuff makes sense to work through. And is that that sense of you're managing risk, or are you mitigating the risk, or is it sort of you've just got to work through that list of discoveries to bring it down and make it something that's understood? Is that the ultimate aim, something that's sort of visible and understood, or is it sort of like a one-off piece, or is this sort of something that we're running regularly, like some of the other sort of practices or audits each year?
It's continuous. It doesn't stop. So the way I like to work is if you were to suffer some kind of ransomware attack, so one acquired that hit the NHS, took the NHS down, and that was due to, you know, doing some patch updates, which they didn't implement in time. So something like a simple update could have stopped one acquired from happening. So I always go in a scenario, if you were to get attacked right now, what controls do you have in place? And then role-playing that within the organization and then building those controls. So back to front and then testing those controls regularly and making sure that's communicated across the organization, because they need to know why. In terms of cybersecurity, it's not a disabler, it's an enabler. People see cybersecurity as a, maybe like a, oh, you know, that's concerning. Yes, it is, but it's also, it's trying to change it that it's people taking responsibility, because when you work in an organization, you're equally as important as one of the C-levels when it comes to responsible for cybersecurity, when, if it's communicated correctly, even though the C-level has more influence and power implementing stuff. But if you spot something as a user and you don't communicate that, it could impact a big risk. That's why everyone in the organization needs to understand the risks and how they can mitigate those risks. So I would say always start from what do you have in place right now if something did happen. If it goes, I will speak to your IT provider. He's great at fitting your network, but when a cyber attack happens, he's not your cybersecurity specialist. And it's not going to be his business or his reputation. You're going to have to face the, you know, the public if it is a large breach. Or if it's not, you know, you may be thinking, oh, I'm not that big, so I'll never go in front of the public. But if you're connected with all your suppliers and you suffered a breach and you can't do any business where you're ordering orders and you can't pay salaries, of course you need to communicate that across. So it's trying to understand that if the worst case happened, how can you get up and running as quick as possible? And if you can't answer that, then that's where we go through and start building these controls in place.
No, that's great. I like that. I mean, it sounds like a bit of a journey that certainly you've been on and you've taken other clients on. I mean, is there pieces that you've enjoyed or learned along the way for this?
Yeah. Cybersecurity, to me, it's something that I'm passionate about because I want to protect people. And people are like, well, you know, you're running a business, Raj. You know, obviously, you know, you run a business to provide. And I guess, you know, finding my calling was that I care. I want to protect organizations. And I'm also, you know, I've got a three-year-old, I've got another child on the way, and I'm also concerned on what they'll be subjected to. But if I can help one person or many organizations, I want to help as many people as I can. And that's also, you know, the public, to school children, to helping people get into cybersecurity as well as business. Because if we become more cyber resilient and become more aware of these threats, we're going to be better at protecting ourselves. There's no such thing as full protection. And I agree that, you know, if a professional cyber criminal wanted to attack me, they probably could, because I've probably got a lot of people that are connected to me, from my family, from my friends, from other businesses. But I'll probably have that eye out when I know something's not right. So from those text messages I receive or those emails that I receive, I just look at people that have been out of character. And there's little steps that I teach from, you know, whenever time you're making the first payment to an organization, confirm those payment details. Don't go by the email, find another email to contact that person. If payment details do change, it's just following those good practice steps. And people, you know, having those steps, to me, it's not, you know, it's not trying to build a process. It's trying to change people's habits in a way that so they reduce being a victim to cybercrime. And that's personally to the public and to businesses as well.
Nice way. Nicely put. And our little fun question at the end before I find out a bit more about how we can get on contact with you. If we're in a superhero movie or a disaster movie, however you like to see it, if someone's going to box you up in the corner, you're back against the wall, what's two things you'd like to grab? Or you can put yourself in the position of being a business owner. Two things you'd like to grab to come out on top if we're stuck in a corner in one of these situations.
Stuck in a corner. So my company's called CyberOne, like Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'm your only hope. I'll just use my Jedi powers to throw that person off me, to be honest. or do some mind tricks to get him off me. But I've definitely will, I'll just say, when you're boxed in the corner, there's always opportunities. You just need to know where to look.
Nicely put, nicely put. I like the tie back there. And so, yeah, leading in and keeping with your Jedi mind tricks of advising us all to how to be more secure in our businesses, what's the best way of getting in contact with you? Or what does a business look like? What sort of businesses do you work with?
So I work with all different sizes of businesses, but if you hold a lot of data or your company relies on a lot of software and tech to obviously manufacture products, give me a shout. I'm always happy to do, you know, just go over you and tell you where your risks lie. I do various workshops, which I do advertise. So I recommend people follow me on my LinkedIn, which is just Raj, R-A-J Kundalia, which is K-U for uniform, N for November, D for data, A for alpha, L for Lima, I for India, A for alpha. Just want to spell that out for people. And then CYB1, which is C-Y-B for Bravo, I for India, then 1-O-N-E.co.uk. If you go on my website or follow me on LinkedIn, I usually do promote my workshops or where I'm speaking, and also have a beautiful cybersecurity community from charities to helplines. So if anyone does want more information, please get in touch.
Super, super. I look forward to looking out for those and keeping my skills and knowledge up. We do some of this stuff with helping marketing and sales keep their stuff GDPR compliant, but we come to someone like you when we need to have that whole testing piece. I think it's definitely a professional business and it moves so much. You need to be aware of what's going on and work with the professionals. So Raj, thanks very much for coming today and sharing with us on this very interesting and prevalent topic. And we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Brilliant. Thank you, Tristan. It's been a pleasure being on the podcast today.
Thanks for joining us again today on the Cliff Notes podcast. If you'd like to get in contact with myself or the guest, their details will be in the show notes, including Raj's contact details. You can go to cliffnotespod.com, and we're on Cliff Notes Pod on Twitter, and catch us there. And we always like to get feedback and hear how people have been getting on with this and other issues that we've covered on other shows. So we'll look forward to seeing you again next time. Take care.